Hello, beautiful people. My guest today is Frank Michael Smith, and Frank is a creator who has built a business around himself and around his interests and passions. For him, that is sports and culture, and he does these incredible short-form videos that on YouTube alone have over 735 million views. He's nearing 1 million subscribers on YouTube. He's got 1.5 million on TikTok, and he is a beast. The way he is able to tell stories in such a short period of time, encapsulating so much detail in them, is a huge skill. And now he's built a team around him. He's been doing this for 2 years. And this episode goes into why he takes driver's license photos the way he does, how he plans from taking the short form attention he's gained to the longer form, and how exactly he writes scripts and people have reacted to his own success. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. And if you do, please share it with somebody you think would enjoy it as well. I appreciate you listening from the bottom of my heart. And let me know what you thought about this episode at Hey Danny Miranda on Twitter. Much love, and let's get right into the episode with Frank Michael Smith.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
Frank Michael Smith, it is an absolute pleasure to have you on this podcast. I'm so honored, everything you've done in such a short period of time. It's incredible to witness. So thank you for being here.
Oh, Danny, thank you, man. It's great to be on.
So I want to get into some real content stuff today. I want to get into your background as a whole. I figured we'd start things off with taking new driver license photos, though. When you do that, what is that experience like, and why do you play around with something so mundane and make it fun?
That's an excellent place to start. No one's ever asked me about that, and they should. I have some of the best driver license photos in the game. I'm actually up for a new one right now, so you know there might be more coming, but that actually started, and what Danny's referencing is I take a goofy photo, a real goofy photo, every time I get my new license, and it started when I was 20. So my 16-year-old one, right when I got my license, was pretty normal. Like, I was just happy to get it. And then we used to have a friend of mine would give me rides to, like, practice after school and pick me up. And he went out to California to work on movie sets, and he came back with this California ID, and he had a wife beater on, a big gold chain, like this ridiculously thick mustache, and his head was shaved. I was like, you can do that at the DMV? Like, they let you? He's like, yeah, like, you can dress however you want. I was like, oh, I'm doing that next time. So in Pittsburgh, when I was turned 20, my license expired, I got my new one, and I was like, oh, I have to try and emulate this. So I have a bit of a mustache right now for people watching. I mean, it's still not great, but at the time I was 20, I couldn't grow a mustache at all. I'm 27 now. And I was like, well, this is not really going to work out if I don't have at least, like, I could spike my hair up a little bit and wear a wife beater and a chain, but I needed the mustache to complete it. So my brother and I actually worked on buying a fake mustache, like you'll see for like cheesy photos, and putting that on, but it looked too fake. So we actually used like Elmer's glue and like glue sticks to like cut off the hairs of the fake mustache, paste it on me, and then it was very nice. Like that was the one that kicked it off, and then I had to outdo it 4 years later, and I dyed my whole head blonde, and that's the one I currently have right now.
I think there's a lot of parallels there with what you do online. It's like you're taking something that could be like a boring story, and you're making it interesting and exciting for people to watch or listen to. Have you gotten pulled over and like showed that to a police officer, or just shown it to anyone in general? And what was their reaction to that photo?
Yeah, very rarely do people say anything about it. It's funny. I would think more people would be like, you're lying to me. But they don't. They just accept it. Like, it's a real ID and everything. So, actually, I got pulled over when I was away this weekend visiting my grandparents in Longboat Key. And my grandfather in the front seat was like, I told you you shouldn't be speeding. I was doing like 40 miles an hour. But, I mean, it's an older community. I was like, man, maybe the speed limit was like 30. I didn't even know. Guy comes to my window. He's like, you didn't have your night lights on. Like, my grandfather doesn't trust the auto setting. So the front ones were on. I didn't know the back ones weren't even on. I was like, why wouldn't you just have it on auto? He's like, nah, I don't do that. So anyway, this guy comes to the window and he's like, hey, this is what happened. Give me your license. He's like, that's you? So yeah, it does happen. It just happened a day ago, but rarely happens.
Wow. What are the odds of me asking that and happening the day before? But
great timing on your part. I will say, to answer your question, the reason I do it is just because I think it's funny. It's a nice little like story to pull out. I find it entertaining. My girlfriend hates it. But it's like, you know, you don't always have to take life so seriously. Like, you can have fun with normal things.
Yeah, and that's what's cool about the things you put online are, you view them as art. And I'm looking at this from the outside, and you're taking that same approach to the simplest thing in your life, which is like almost making it art or putting your own twist on it. Do you see the similarity there?
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, I can't take all the credit. Really, I copied this guy. But but yeah, I enjoy that. It's like, it's a story. When I pull it out of my wallet, it's a story.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's take it back to 2010, and you are putting your YouTube videos, splicing them up. You got a Sidney Crosby compilation. You're putting all these YouTube videos online, and then it gets taken down. YouTube comes down and they say, no more. Frank, you're not putting videos online anymore. What was
that
experience?
Actually earlier, but yeah, that was early. You've done your homework, though. I think I originally started in like 2008 or 9, but the channel that I post on now might say 2010, mm-hmm. but my original account was like, it wasn't called this. It was called FB27 Productions, and that stood for like my little kid screen name, Frank Baseball 27. It's just like,
I love it.
Oh my God. That was a dope name at the time. I was like, yeah, I love baseball. still do. But anyway, that's what it stood for. And that was the account where, like, before YouTube really had, I don't think it even sold to Google yet. So before it really had everything aligned, copyrights were a really big deal. If you used a song, eventually, it could be a year later, you get a strike, you get three, and you're done. So I was using, like, you know, popular songs. I think the first song I used in that Crosby video was a Dropkick Murphy song. And it was a hit. I mean, the video itself sucked. Like, there's grainy footage. Like, it was horrible. But really, that was about, like, learning how to use video editing software and just being curious as a kid.
What do you think attracted you to YouTube? Because a lot of people saw YouTube at that time, but they didn't do anything about it, or they didn't say, wow, this is cool. This is gonna... I'm attracted to this. I know for me, I put up a Jeremy Lin highlight video when I was, you know, 10 years ago when I was in 2010. And now it has like 400,000 views. And Lord knows how many yours would get if you still had them.
So some of them are still up. I mean, 400,000 is a great number, though. I have to watch that.
It's nothing crazy. But the point is, we both were attracted to the platform and knew there was something there. If you could rewind, what do you think you saw back then that sparked your curiosity?
I just thought it was really cool because when we would get laptops in school, I was like, can you watch videos on these? Because at the time it was like Roland, one of those old school TVs. And when you would get laptops in class, you're like, let's go. Like, this is going to be a great period. And before YouTube, there was like Yahoo Video. And I remember being like, can you, it seems like these applications I'm using are video. Like, can you watch videos on the computer? And I remember searching like, dog talking or something, and I was like, maybe someone's put up a video of a dog talking, and someone did. Like, this dog was really talking. It was, to this day, that video needs more views. But I was like, how do you upload a video like this? I saw it and I thought it was interesting and I was curious about it. And then I realized that anyone can do this. So I wanted to try it.
Yeah. Now there's going to be a bunch of videos of dog talking and people right below are going to comment, Frank Smith sent me here.
I'm telling you, if you search these videos, dogs are like parrots. Some of these dogs can talk.
Learn something new every single day. So let's fast forward a bit. I think we gave some context for you as the creative, and there's much more in that story. But take me through the process right now of when you meet some guys on TikTok who have 25 million followers and who are... and they're just showing you the platform. First of all, how did you get that meeting and what were your takeaways from it?
I don't even know where you found this information. You've really done your homework. I'm impressed. But yeah, those guys work for Flight House. And I worked for Clutch Points at the time and it was a Christmas party. And it was it wasn't their party. It was my friends, worked for a different company. They were friends with the guys from Flight House. So I actually asked my friend, I was like, can you introduce me to them? Because at the time, Clutch Points didn't have a TikTok presence, and we were interested in it. So I wanted to talk to them, and they showed it to me. This is way before TikTok was in vogue. So we were like, wow, 25 million followers. Like, that's a really high number. Like, what does that mean? What videos do you post? What do these look like? So they showed me their account, and I was like, is it like dancing videos? Is it memes? Like, they're like, no, it's the evolution of the meme, and like, this is what we do, and we're like transitioning right now. And after that, like, we played around with it at Clutch Points, but I ended up doing a few videos for Flight House. Like, there, if you scroll back, like, you can even find some of the videos I hosted on their page. They had a big enough following that it made it very interesting for us. And that's how we met, just at a Christmas party.
Yeah, that's cool. But then it was 5 months until you actually had the courage or started doing it on your own. Take me through those 5 months.
In those 5 months, I was really interested in building original content for Clutch Points because we didn't have any. Essentially, I mean, Clutch Points is still this way. It functions like a high school fan page. And I don't care how that comes off. That's what it is. They don't really own their material. And when you don't own your material, you can't sell ads on it. And no brand is going to come on and be a presenting sponsor. So I even had an original show called Microwavables at Clutch Points. And that was an attempt to like, hey, let's own something here. Let's build something so that, you know, we can be treated like more legitimate. And in those 5 months, we were really just playing around with ideas of how can we bring on original content and be treated like one of the big boys. And, you know, it didn't end up really happening that way, but that's what was going on in those 5 months, just experimentation.
Yeah, and you had a really interesting situation with Clutch Points where you had a falling out, and it seems like they didn't understand the dynamic between a creator and a company, and I think it would help if you could shed light on that story and where you guys didn't exactly see eye to eye.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, being the owner of a media company now, there's ways to go about this and there's ways not to. Clearly, I still believe that to be treated like a legitimate media company, you have to own your content. And they weren't really interested in this, and that frustrated me. So eventually, I started making my own videos, and on my own time, on my own phone, my own account, got all my work done, whatever, and this is totally on the side. And I would tell Clutch Points, like, hey, you guys should repost me, like, these videos are really taking off, and they just kind of blew me off, and we'd even have a meeting about it every Monday, and no one seemed to care, so I was just further frustrated, and I felt like I was the only one like with any real talent. Like I was the only one there that actually knew how to use Adobe Premiere. The only one there that had any like advanced Photoshop skills and could actually be on camera. And like I was like the full package, I felt like. I still feel like that. But I was a true one-man team. I didn't have a writer. I didn't have a video editor. This was entirely me, and I was pulling hundreds of thousands of views, way more than anything that was happening there. So I was like, why aren't you guys taking notice of this? It didn't make any sense to me. Then I started to get reposted by other pages. I remember The Score. The Score reposted me, and I was like, now this is weird. Other companies that we compete with are reposting me. I'm an employee of this other company. This is really strange. I don't know, like, maybe I can use this to show them, like, hey, look, other companies are doing it. That flipped the switch. Then they started to want to work with me on it. And what ended up really happening was I wanted to be treated like talent, and they weren't willing to do that. And that meant reworking my contract and creating splits of sorts for brand deals and how any talent is treated. And they were completely refusing any of that. So it came down to an option for me. Basically, what I could do was I could stay at Clutch Points and take what I thought was a really bad deal. They wanted my account. They wanted to rebrand it. They weren't going to let me make these videos anymore. Actually, what they offered me was, you can stay and you can't do any sport analysis storytelling. You'd have to actually like be playing basketball. And I was like, what? Like, I was like, that's not what I do. Like, I love playing basketball and I'm a good basketball player, but that's a total 180. And he was like, yeah, like my boss was like, you can do trick shots. I was like, yeah, let me drop everything I'm doing right now that's completely taking off, hundreds of thousands of views, followers just pouring in, and start doing trick shots. Like, no one will notice. Like, by the way, I don't like doing trick shots. I don't like it. It's like not my thing. So I thought it was a completely laughable approach. So I chose to go on my own, and it was one of the best choices I ever made.
Yeah, so this isn't the only example of a company not getting it. When doing research for this, I heard about companies coming into your DMs offering you like $20 an hour or just a laughable rate. And I'm curious from your perspective, as somebody who's been in the game for some time now, why do you think that companies have such a hard time understanding what creators do?
Because they don't do it themselves. Hmm. Like, imagine if someone was like, imagine if you had to, let's say you're a tech company and you don't code at all. You've never been technical. You're not an engineer. Then what makes you qualified to run a tech company? One that's completely built on code. Mm-hmm. If you're running a media company, you should know how to create media. And they didn't know how to do that. And that's what a lot of these companies struggle with, is they don't speak the language. They don't know how to create thumbnails the proper way. And maybe they have some basic Photoshop skills, but they don't know how to add, how to merge layers, like a very basic thing. The keyboard commands. They don't know how to do camera raw effects. You know, some of these really basic things. I'm not even getting deep into it here. It's frustrating when you know all these things and the person who's running the company doesn't, and they won't listen to you. It's like, well, how? That would be like you telling someone how to code and you don't code. Mm-hmm.
I think a lot has to do with the fact that people inherit systems that they didn't build from the bottom up. If Jeff Bezos was in charge of running the country, he would have an idea how to do that because he built a company, a country from the bottom up, basically an Amazon. But if you have people who inherit the system and haven't built it from scratch, it's very difficult to translate. Does that analogy make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's like you're skipping steps. You shouldn't skip steps.
Yeah. Well said. So, you know, interestingly enough, you've said before that you don't like it when you're having to build a new platform. And I thought that was interesting because you've done so well in building new platforms relatively quickly. Why is it that you don't like starting from scratch in a new place?
Remind me what I said.
So I believe it was in the Buster show where you said, where he was talking about how he likes the idea of starting new, starting on a new platform. And you said, oh, I don't like starting someplace new. I don't like when I had to go on TikTok, it was like, oh, I have to learn this new thing. You said you had the same idea going to other platforms as well. So I was just curious why you don't particularly like
maybe
that.
I can reframe what I said. And I don't really remember what I said, but some of it's true is, you know, TikTok and YouTube Shorts are a little bit different because they're so based on discovery that you have a chance. You know, I have not just me that creates videos now, but Chef Roy, my brother. We have Jack Farber, who does Juice Business. We have Nate DiMaggio, who does Juice Globe. We have King Asante, who does Let's Talk About It on Snap. These guys, like Snapchat should be included in that too. They're based on discovery. Snapchat, YouTube Shorts, TikTok. You can have zero and get 100,000 views right away because they're going to reward you for quality of watch time and basically video. And Instagram and Twitter and Facebook are not like that. Twitter is something I'm trying to grow right now, and it's a challenge. Like, I like learning about it, but I don't feel like I'm being given a fair chance. I don't think I'm being rewarded for the quality of tweets or on Instagram, the quality of posts. I mean, Instagram's a total joke with it right now. Like, I don't think you can post a reel over 30 seconds. There's no use in having reels over 30 seconds. I post them anyway, but you're never going to have a reel blow up that's like 59 seconds. So to reframe it, I don't like it when I feel like the platform is lagging so far behind. Like, if you're not actually going to be given a chance to get discovered, if you're going to have to pay for promotion and you're going to have to, you know, run contests or giveaways, like, no, I don't like, who would like that?
No, that makes sense. It's funny because TikTok and YouTube Shorts seem like such a platform that rewards just the truth of the content. Like, okay, this is good, so we'll show it to more people. And so how does starting on those two platforms, how does that color your thinking going to other platforms?
Honestly, we don't really have so much time. We already have so much time allocated making these videos. You know, each 1 minute video we put like 12 hours into collectively. And I know how to grow on Instagram. You have to post shorter videos. So if I post reels that are like 25 seconds, I'd have 100,000 more followers, easy. But we don't have time to make those. And honestly, I don't want to just tell a story in 25 seconds. It probably won't be a very good video. So we have to focus our time on things that seem worthwhile. And right now, that's not Instagram. Twitter, we actually are spending some time on because I think our scripts can be reworked as threads. So follow me on Twitter, FrankMSmith_. You'll see some more of those. But there's just not enough time in one day to worry about like 9 different platforms.
Yeah. So right now, where are you focusing primarily?
We focus on making short form videos, and those are anywhere from 59 to 1:15. You know, TikTok lets you go 3 minutes, so some of them will be a little bit longer versions on TikTok on my page. But we stitch those together for Snapchat. We have Snapchat shows. So effectively, we're not doing that much work to create these Snapchat shows. There is things on top of it you really have to worry about. You know, like stitching them together sounds easy, takes some hours, but they reward you pretty well on there with pay. So it's definitely worth our time. So I guess you wouldn't call it short form because they're like 3 minute videos, 3 minutes, sometimes longer on Snapchat, but really they're just 3 1-minute videos. That's where we spend our time, short form video, and we figure out the rest.
Yeah.
Kind of repurpose the rest.
That makes sense. One of the things that you've obviously done so well is short form, but I'm curious how you plan on transferring that attention to longer form pieces. Like, I know you do Rhino Live podcast, where you got to get somebody to really care about you. And I feel like it's very difficult to do with a 1 minute video sometimes.
Yeah, I'm discouraged by long form video and live video. I think it's good, live video, good for community building. I haven't seen it really perform that well. But we've tried a lot of different things. Like, I'm almost completely exhausted my options here. It doesn't seem like the algorithm wants that from me. On YouTube, podcasting. Not that there's an algorithm in podcasting, but our next move is going to be just saying, like, all right, the algorithm's not going to treat us correctly, because I see videos on my home screen of YouTube all the time, and some of them are cool. Like, Jimmy High Roller makes a great video, but I think mine are just as good. And if they're not just as good, maybe they're 75% as good. We'll get 1% of the views. Like, we just don't seem to get pushed through that algorithm. And it's something we have to figure out, but we have an option. We could say, like, okay, we'll play the algorithm game. Or we can say, let's just go for it, and we already make mini documentaries, so let's just make feature-length documentaries. Let's try and make 30-minute episodes and not really worry about how the algorithm treats us, because these will be so good that we can sell them to streaming platforms or Facebook Video or Amazon Prime. You know, like, I don't know if Facebook Video is really a streaming platform, but you know what I mean. You can sell the content. You can license the content. The video, I should say.
Yeah. And it's interesting when the creative becomes something you have to think about money-wise. When did that come into your... When did that happen for you? And then what? How did that change your content, if at all, when you started monetizing your videos?
We were monetized right from the get-go. I had a relationship with a company called Sports Betting Dime that I previously had at Clutch Points. You know, I was pumped. I wanted to make more money while I was working there. So I convinced my boss to let me have half my time be like a junior sales rep role, where I'd go out and hunt like these like strange emails that came in and see if there's anything there. And one of them was from Sports Betting Dime, and they actually wanted to sponsor us for $25,000 a month. And I was going to make like 5% on it. So I was like, wow, like, this is an extra more than $1,000. I forget what it came out to, but I was going to make like almost like 150% of my salary. Like, it was a huge raise for me. On that day when we signed it, NBA gets canceled because of COVID and the deal gets voided. So I was like, this sucks. So when I went out on my own, I knew they still wanted to spend money. So I talked to the guys there. They're awesome guys. Like, I think they were a great partner of mine and a useful website too. And they were like, okay, we'll give you this contract to be a sponsor. You got to make X amount of videos. And we killed it. We did such a great job, and we grew their Instagram like so much. That's the thing I'm most proud of with them. But yeah, we were profitable like right away.
What do you do to grow their Instagram?
We ran contests. We ran I don't know if you've ever seen it, the daily contest I run, but like, basically the rule is you have to follow them in order to be prize eligible. And it's fun. Like, it's like, all right, you get dealt five players, you pick three, whoever has the winning number that night wins. It's a really simple game, but people loved it. And I still run this contest sometimes, but yeah, that was a huge boost for their Instagram. I think they're over like 20,000.
And they started with a lot
zero,
less.
Like zero.
Yeah, wow. That's well done. You mentioned before about the team that you've created and all the different people who are creating content or creating with you. How did that come to be, and how do you start moving in the direction of not just you, but now other people? What was that transition like?
We had to, like, you can only go so far as an individual creator. Like, you want to build something that is an asset. So in order to get some of these bigger deals, I understand this from being on the other end of it at Clutch Points, is like, you get the bigger deals by bundling things together. So I wanted to go to advertisers with five pages that are awesome instead of just one. Now, I don't want to completely blow it up and have 100 pages because then I'm spreading myself thin. But as soon as I felt like, okay, we could expand, we got one more, then we got another, then we got another. These pages are still very high quality. We're not spreading ourselves thin. And they're growing really, really rapidly right now, especially Chef Roy. His YouTube is blowing up. He's almost at 100K. So that was the idea, is we want to be treated like a media entity so we can get these bundled deals and so that, you know, we can compete on a higher level. And it's like, it's just having more ammo at the end of the day. It's like, if you want to be treated like one of the big boys, then you can't just be a one-man team. Like, what if Dave Portnoy was just Dave Portnoy? Like,
right.
They're not as powerful.
What are you looking for in creators that you're bringing on to your team?
I'm definitely looking for people who have the juice. That's the name of our media company. Having the juice means you're passionate about what you do, you're excited about this line of work, and it shows through in your video making that you're telling a story and you can make other people care about it because you have the juice. I started saying that in a lot of my live sessions when people would come on and they'd have like the lights off in their room and like their camera wouldn't even be showing their face. I'd be like, this guy has no juice. He's speaking in monotone. Like, you need to speak with conviction. When you're on camera, like, people should be excited about watching this video. You have to have energy, and it should be infectious. That's what I'm looking for.
When did you realize you had the juice?
I've had the juice for a long time now. Like, my first video with Giannis, like, that's as soon as I started appearing on camera. I've had it since then. But I didn't appear on camera for a long time. I don't want to say it was my whole life. Like, those videos you referenced in the beginning about Sidney Crosby and all this stuff, I was never on camera. I didn't have the juice yet.
That's interesting. Yeah. So take me through one of the things you do so well that I've just started doing short form videos and I realize is very difficult, is just looking at the camera, like making sure that everything you say is directly to the audience of one, which is the camera. How do you practically go about doing that?
I don't think you can overcomplicate it. I think you just have to look into the lens and speak. Like, it's, I don't know if it's deeper than that. Like, you can't. So I look at my phone sometimes and I'll memorize my line and then I look at the camera and I speak. Like, that's just what I do.
Yeah. What I'm going for is, like, do you memorize every line that you say, and do you have a teleprompter? Like, how do you go about
it? No, I've tried using a teleprompter. It comes off inauthentic. It's You can tell. I've seen people make these videos and play off my style where I'm like, he's reading off a teleprompter for sure, and it doesn't come out juicy. I tell you that. Like, it feels like you're called on to read in class, like you're in English class and you're like popcorn reading. And it's like, oh, it's this guy's turn to read. And you can tell there's no juice there. You're reading. You're not acting. You're not performing. You're reading. So I memorize my line. I read it in the camera.
Interesting.
I mean, not read it in the camera. Speak it into the camera.
Cool. So take me through a little bit before that process of actually writing the script out. I know you have people who write scripts for you now, but I'm sure you still do it as well. What does the process look like of taking an idea and then creating a script around it?
Number one, you have to be able to write a hook. Number two, this story shouldn't be able to be explained to you. If you have an idea for me and you're like, hey, Frank, we should do a story on this basketball player. He did this and this. And I feel like I have the whole story already. If I'm not curious, like, for anything else, if you can tell someone this in two sentences, it's probably a tweet and it's not a story. There should be an arc to this. Like, we really think about it as mini documentaries, and you'll see us even splice in source clips. So there should be a hook. There should be a build up. There should be some conflict. There should be a resolution, and definitely something where you're like, wow, that was entertaining. I learned something there. And if you have both of those, oftentimes you'll share it with a friend, and that's what social media's end game is all about. Like, going viral is about sharing. So if these platforms see you sharing, they'll share it.
One thing I like that you've said before is it's about sending it to a group chat. Would you send this to a group? And that is just a helpful way to frame anything you post online.
Yeah, I definitely believe that. It's a really easy lens to look at it through. If you're not proud of your own work, don't post it. Don't waste anyone's time, including yourself. Don't make the video then. If it's not something where you're genuinely interested in this story, and it's not something that you would like pull out your phone at lunch and show your friend, then it's probably not a good video.
Yeah, so it's interesting because you've also given the advice, and I agree with that 100%, but you've also given the advice of if you're just starting something or just you want to start a podcast, just record an episode. So how do you think about the dichotomy there?
Okay, so in regards to podcasting, I think a lot of people, it's great that so many people are curious and want to have a podcast. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think my best advice to most people is just like in business, you make an MVP, a minimum viable product, so you don't have to cost yourself time, money, resources. Make an MVP for your podcast. Literally go to your voice recording app on your phone. I know you have an iPhone. Click on that app and talk for a little bit. Maybe it's yourself. Maybe it's a duo podcast. Talk on there. Click record. End it. And see if this is something you even like doing. You might not even like it. So before you get way ahead of yourself and create a logo and buy all this expensive equipment and whatever, just record it on your phone. I would listen. Like the podcasts I listen to, if they didn't have all the expensive stuff, I would probably still listen to them because it's not about that. Your tools will only take you so far. Don't even worry about getting an RSS feed. None of that. Just record something on your phone and get started, because that really is the hardest part. So many people talk about having a podcast and they've talked about it maybe 50 times and they've never recorded. So stop wasting your time.
Yeah. One thing.
And other people's attention. Other people don't want to hear about that either. Mm.
I saw you reacted to your first video ever. That was a really cool look into you talking about the process.
First TikTok video ever.
Excuse me. First TikTok video ever that you posted. And when you look back on that, I think it was a year ago. So you're looking back at it from 2 years ago. What was that like?
It was very experimental, just like I'm saying right now. I recorded that off an iPhone 7, off the front camera, not even the back camera, with a $12 socket thing you stick to the wall with a magnet on the other end. And I put a magnet on the other end of my phone so I could just click, put it right on there. And so I'm $12 in, didn't buy any lighting. I put it right next to a window so I'd have natural light. It wasn't perfect, but it was enough. And I had a $50 mic from Target. It's called Snowball. So I was like $62 in, and I already had video editing software, so I guess most people don't have that, but there's a lot of free video editing software. You can even use TikTok software that would suffice. What I'm saying is it was an MVP. It was very low risk. No one followed me. I don't really care if I wore the beanie or anything like that. I wasn't really expecting this video to like pop off. So none of my friends followed me on Twitter, TikTok. None of my family followed me on TikTok. It wasn't really like a big pressure moment. Like if I was to post this on Instagram back then, where I know all my friends and family followed me, it'd be like, I might get judged. No one was going to judge me. I had zero followers. It was a brand new account. So it was kind of a very low risk experimental situation that went right almost immediately.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this idea a lot of, when something works, it seems like it works immediately. And has that also been true from your perspective? I've heard from other creators on TikTok, it's like, yeah, I posted my fourth video just blew up. Just other ideas in general, it's like, wow, that idea took hold right away. I don't know if that's always true, but do you think that's a useful mental model for somebody to use?
I don't think things that end up working are always like that. I think some things take time to click, but when something does work like that, you should double down on it. I mean, clearly there's something there. If you try something new and it blows up right away, like, spend more time on that for sure.
Yeah. You mentioned your family before, and I'm curious what they have had to say about all this crazy success.
They're proud of me, and Roy's my brother, and he's part of the business now. They enjoy the videos and they're proud of me, but it's not really something we like talk about all the time. We will talk about it, but it doesn't really affect anything. It's like, oh well, that's great, like congrats, or we're not like popping bottles all the time. Like, my family's proud of me, and we mention it sometimes, but it's really just like business as usual. Like, we're a family and we act like we always have.
Yeah. I was listening to a podcast with Jay Shetty, and he was telling the host about how he would tell his girlfriend about some crazy success that he had on a particular Instagram post or a podcast that blew up, and she'd be like, that's great. And he wouldn't get the validation from them as he expected. And he said the reasoning for that is that she cared about things deeper than how many likes he got on a particular post or anything vanity from that perspective. She cared about him at a deeper level. And it also sounds similar to your family's relationship as well.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. Like I don't want to misconstrue it. Like, my family is definitely super proud of me and Roy for what we've built, but it's not like it's not the first thing people say when they see me. Like, if I see my cousins or my other brother or my dad or my mom or anyone, they're not like, how's your recent video? I can't believe it's got a million views. It's never, ever like that. It's like, I will bring it up to them and I'll be like, look at this. And like, wow, that's great. It's not like a gigantic deal.
Yeah. I think that's probably a misconception that people might have. What other misconceptions do you think that people might have who are just watching your videos or who don't know everything? What do you think they would get wrong?
Well, in that same vein, like, I do a really great job of responding to everyone on Instagram, and something I enjoy doing, and I'm happy to do it. I enjoy it, and it's great for the community. It's good for business. It makes other people happy. It's all together just nothing but wins. But people will be like really, really, really surprised when I respond, like as if like creators are like evil. I guess most of these creators just won't ever respond to you. And I have the blue check on Instagram, and maybe they've never got a message back from someone like that, or they're just a fan of me, whatever. But they oftentimes are like, I cannot believe you responded like this. Like, they think I'm like really famous is what I'm getting at. And I'm not, like, I'm just not at all. Like, rarely will people ever recognize me. And I think that most people who have never passed like 10,000 followers, not that everyone's trying to do that, but most people think that if you have a million followers, you're like this public figure. And you're not. You're just not. There's too many people with that. And I don't know. Like, it's really, to be a recognizable face, you have to be like an actor or like a sports star or like someone on Shark Tank. Like, I'm a very normal person, and these people who respond to me think I'm like some celebrity. So let's not get it twisted. I'm not at all. I'm very low key, and no one ever recognizes me.
Well, you know, it's funny because the nature of fame today is that you could be walking into a Starbucks and one person could be freaking out because you've had a drastic impact on their life, and the rest of the Starbucks could be like, who the hell is that guy? Whereas if that happened 30 years ago, it would be rare for one person to know somebody and the rest of the world, the rest of the the Starbucks to say, who is that person? So it speaks to the decentralized nature of fame from my perspective.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's very saturated now. There's a lot of people that are in this position that I'm in. I read that, oh man, I'm going to miss the number. You might know it, but I'm almost at 1 million YouTube subscribers. And there's like, I think there's like 17,000 accounts that have that. So it's not the same. I remember in the early days of YouTube where it was like Ryan Higa, whatever his name was like the first one to get 1 million. And that was a really big deal. Subscribers were not easy to come by. And the fact that this guy was going to hit 1 million, it was like he and like Shane Dawson and like Phil DeFranco. And the fact that these guys were nearing this number was like, I mean, it seemed impossible. So there's 17,000 of those people now, and I'll be one of them soon. But, you know, do I like the 1 in 17,000 odds? Like, no, you would never bet on something like that. So it's a very small number. And I agree with you. It's just, there's a lot of people like this now.
Yeah. But 17,000 people is not that many in a world of 7 billion. So it's an incredible accomplishment and are on the way to becoming an incredible accomplishment very soon. How do you celebrate your wins, if at all?
You know, subscribers and likes and views are so, sometimes it seems like there's no real rhythm to it. I can have a video that crushes on TikTok and tanks in YouTube Shorts or vice versa, and it just doesn't seem like you can replicate this stuff. So I don't really celebrate too much with the stats. Maybe I'll do something for 1 million. I haven't decided anything, but we celebrate more when we get like a long-term contract, like when we get a brand to come on for 12 months. Like, that's a real win. Subscribers are kind of vanity.
Makes sense. Yeah. How do you think that creating these videos in this style has changed your brain?
I think about story structure much more. And I don't watch as much content, as much videos, or I have less time to actually consume. So maybe that's a good thing.
So you see something or hear something and you're like, how can I turn this into a story? Is like the first reaction.
Yeah, sometimes I'll think of things in that nature where I'll be like, someone will be telling me a story and I'm like, ah, oh, that could be a good video.
Do you wish you could turn that off, or is that
something? No, I love it.
Yeah.
It's great. Like we were talking earlier today. I have Jack Farber and Roy here working with us today, and Jack was telling this story about this guy who's figured out credit. Like, he got a lot of credit cards and he was able to basically like manipulate the credit system where he didn't have like much income, if any. And now he has like a $17 million credit limit. He's just like figured this game out. I think his ad is like at credit. And he's like the credit god. And I was like, wow, that's like a really interesting story. We should definitely do that. So now it's fun. I'll get to learn more about it.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I say that and ask that question because Casey Neistat would vlog his day, and he got to a certain point, so many vlogs, so many stories that he told himself that he was the star in, that he started to dislike his own day and dislike anything about it because he felt like an actor. I feel like it's kind of different from your perspective because you're, from my vantage point, more of a reporter of like, you turn the camera on, you're reporting on this story rather than being the main character in a movie that you're creating constantly.
Yeah, our lives are much different. I don't watch his content, his videos, but we live very different lives. I'm on camera once or twice a week. I don't like the filming part of it. It's my least favorite part of the process. It's not fun. That's one of the things I say, like podcasting, like make sure you like this enough to do it, because the actual podcast part of it might be your least favorite part of it. Filming the videos, I'll film like 8 or 9 at a time, and it's not fun. You stutter, you mess your lines up. You're sitting in the same position, like your back might get stiff. There's hot lights in your face. Like it's not, it's work, and that's fine with me. Like not everything can be like, you know, like a party, but there's other parts of it I really love and it's worth it. So we live different lives. Like I'm acting for several hours a week where it seems like he's doing it all day long.
Yeah. He got burnt out, had to stop. And have you thought about burnout or anything like that? Like, and how do you guard against that?
I hire great people. I hire talented people and we have an awesome video team. Anyone who's seen my videos, that's definitely something they notice right away, is we have higher quality videos than anyone else in short form storytelling. And it's why we're the industry leader and why we'll be the industry leader in several categories soon. But I was doing all the video editing myself for the first 200. I was getting burnt out and I couldn't keep doing it. And I knew I needed help. So I brought on amazing, talented guys. And like we have a writer now. We have other creators. So you have to be self-aware enough to know, like, you cannot be this one-man team forever. Like, as much as you, as great as a job as you think you might be doing, other people can do it probably better. They can edit videos better than me now. So it actually ends up being like, great, I'm not burnt out and our content's better.
Yeah. No, that sounds like it makes a lot of sense. Before I let you go, Frank, I'm curious about your keystone habit. What's the one habit that if you do, the rest of your day is better or things are moving along in a direction you want them to go?
I've talked about this before. I think that the people that would tell you, like, you have to have a, sometimes you see these ridiculous, like, checklists. Like, here's Mark Wahlberg's day when he was on set. And it's like every half hour is like bookmarked for a different activity. Like, even like playing with his kids will be like 30 minutes here and maybe 30 more minutes at night and like 15 minute lunch break. And we are in a creative industry. And if you confine yourselves to these routines every single day, then, you know, I think it might be counterproductive. At least it is for me. Everyone's different, but I don't have a real routine. Scheduled by time. I'll post a video every day. I do that every day. So maybe it's that. Maybe it's posting a video. Like, really, that's the most routine thing I do is I post. But I usually film on Tuesdays, but not always. I like to have lunch, but I don't have lunch every single day. I like having eggs for breakfast, but I don't do that every day. Sometimes I'll shower in the morning. Sometimes I'll shower in the afternoon. Like I'm kind of like going with the flow here. I don't have a really scheduled routine and I think I'm better because of it.
Good, man. Well, I'm happy to hear that. And I'm grateful for the thoughtful answers today and really appreciate you coming on the podcast. Where can people connect with you further?
Danny, thank you. Yeah, it's been a great conversation. You can find me at Frank Michael Smith on YouTube and TikTok. Twitter is Frank M. Smith _. Instagram, Frank Michael Smith _. And look for some feature-length documentaries coming soon. That's really what my brain's on right now. So it might take a while, but we're going to take it to an entirely new level.
Well, I'm excited to see how that plays out. And we'll have all those links for you down below. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. Incredibly grateful for you listening. And I'd love to know what you thought about this episode as well at Hey Danny Miranda, or go and share it with somebody you think would enjoy it. And that would mean the world to me. So thank you for listening. I will see you in the next episode. Peace.